And thank you.
That was me. Well.
So, do I have a motion to approve the agenda? Did everyone, I'm sure, got a chance to look at the agenda?
This is Josie. I make a motion to approve the agenda.
I'll second that. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Josie Muse, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Okay, so we'll move on to approving the main minutes. Did everyone else get a chance to look at them? And does anyone have any comments on the minutes?
This is Jesse. I did look at them and I don't have any additions.
Yes and no for Matt. I looked at them, no comments.
Cookie, did you get a chance to look at them?
No, I did not, but it's my fault. I just didn't look at them, so I'll pass.
Okay, well, I didn't see them either in my email, so can we just push this on till July?
Yes.
Okay, no problem. Okay, well, let's just do that. So we'll approve the minutes in, for May and July.
Okay.
And then we have Lee here tonight. And we're going to go over the guest ranch, RV park, campground standards, and whatever else you have for us. So welcome, Lee.
Hello.
Hi, Lee.
I think that we have the memo I sent up on the screen. And while you cannot see me because my camera does not appear to be functioning, I can see you. So I think I captured all of the things we talked about a month ago about the campgrounds and guest ranches. And in the course of doing so, realized that we had a couple of things we needed to work on just as definitions. You will see that detached cabins are now permitted as part of a campground. You will see that I have added a definition of landscaping. There was no definition of landscaping at all in the zoning ordinance. And when I went looking for xeriscaping, I came up with what I think is a better approach of water-wise landscaping that's used in Park City and by the Denver Water Board and by a whole bunch of other people. And that provides for what seems obvious in some cases, which is you would mix some irrigation with some xeriscape. And I gave you a link to an interesting handbook from Denver Water about water-wise landscaping. And then in thinking that through, I thought, well, hey, we don't need to just have water-wise landscaping in RV parks or campgrounds. Let's associate that with all commercial uses. So as we march through what I put in the memo, there is a proposed addition to the commercial development standards that would do that. You will see that I put in the 20 unit limit, and that I've added cabins as part of the definition of what's included. I took out the 10 minute drive, and the way this is worded right now is, as you asked last time, that a campground has to have an attendant. I put wind in with the solid waste disposal in a way that I think allows some flexibility. I added the definition of guest ranch, tinkered with a little bit, and then pulled the part of that definition as it had been written by that working group into some standards in terms of the minimum required acreage, the size of the facility in terms of no more than 10 overnight guest rooms and no more than 12,000 square feet of space devoted to it. I also, once we got, you know, once I started thinking about wind and solid waste, I went back and I proposed an addition to the overall commercial development standards that adds wind as an issue there. So I think we've got a couple of teeny improvements to propose in the overall standards here as far as solid waste and water-wise landscaping. And that's what I did. I think it reflects the conversation that we had. And if it's more or less okay, I will get a draft together that shows these changes rather than here in a memo where you can see them more clearly, but puts these changes into the ordinance where they belong. And I can do that quite easily. And then you guys can decide whether you want to take this on to a public hearing before the Planning Commission, or if you want to wait until you have more to take to hearing. And I guess at this point, are the changes okay? And if they are, do you want to go to a hearing soon, or do you want to wait until there's more to talk about?
Does anyone have any comments on the memo that we made for us?
This is Cookie. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. I read over everything and I liked the changes. I couldn't really see anything that I would change. I appreciate the changes that you thoughtfully put in. And I myself would love to push this forward if we could, and get it off our desk and onto somebody else's for approval too.
Okay, Matt Cochran commenting. Thank you, Lee. I like what I see. I think that the only question I have is one that was asked on there and unanswered, which I don't have an answer for, but about pigs and llamas as part of the livestock thing.
Right.
And so not being a rancher, you know, or in livestock, you know, I wonder, maybe Josie, you have an answer to that or someone.
Yeah, this is Josie. I'm just thinking back to, you know, our conversations with the working group and trying to remember. And I think, you know, our intent there was, as it says, to honor Boulder Ranching Heritage, and where a guest ranch is bringing folks in for, you know, some type of a ranching experience, I would hope. I think that's why we left it with just cattle, sheep, or horses. I don't have an opinion about pigs, and I don't have anything against llamas. So, you know, I'll go with the group on that. But yeah. I'm thinking that's where we... that's where we were coming from when we redid this definition.
And I think it's easy to understand where you came from. And I guess the point I would make is that because your definition, as you set it up, referred to the tax code. And I took, you know, what you had said about, is it qualifies as a farm use for tax purposes. I made that more formal and said that it qualifies under the Utah Farmland Assessment Act standards of practice. And their standards of practice, you know, don't limit livestock to just cattle and horses. And maybe just sticking with being consistent with the state is the simplest thing to do.
Yeah, listening to both of you, I would have to agree with that, because I think the only thing that concerns me is that llamas and pigs, to their discredit, would be used as a loophole somehow. And so a traditional sort of heritage ranch would not be set up in order to make a guest ranch. I don't know if that's valid, but that's where my mind goes.
I think about that. But there again, I also was wondering, on D, livestock used by guest ranches shall not create odor, insect death, or other nuisances. And I don't know how you get away with that. I mean, how can you regulate that when they create so much of all of that? You know, can we do that?
Well, I think that the answer is that as long as the stock are kept, I mean, there are a lot of people who operate pack strings and dude strings horses in pretty close proximity to a lot of people and manage to do it without creating a nuisance for nearby uses. So I know just from experience that it is possible to comply with this standard. It may be a little overbroad the way that I wrote it. I was trying to keep it as straightforward and simple as I could, but what I envisioned, and it may never happen, it might never happen, is that someone could, on an existing ranch, an existing agricultural parcel, move, you know, a guest ranch facility, cabins or a lodge or whatever, in pretty close to other homes. And if they don't manage it properly, then there could be a nuisance issue. And I just wanted to kind of check that box off so that people were thinking about it when you look at an application. I'm guessing that most people who would do this would not bump into the problem in the first place. But if you think that's overbroad, we can try to make it more precise.
So this I'd is just Joseph. Like to add in, if you're not speaking, can you please mute so we don't get our conversation stomped on? Thank you.
No, thanks, Matt. So I have two thoughts. First, let's just go back to the pigs and the llamas and how that might be a loophole. I feel like we're pretty well buffered there because we have a 55 acre minimum. So to me, 55 acres, that's a ranch. But if we were, you know, say guest ranches could be on 5 acres like it currently is, then I could see it as definitely a loophole. So I'm okay with that as long as we keep it at the 55 acres. And I think that 55 also plays into this odor, insect, dust, and other nuisances. I want to be really careful about, you know, not losing any agricultural rights that we currently have. And if we put this limitation in there, to me, that's kind of a slippery slope. So I don't see how we can avoid dust and odor in this type of environment, especially dust. I mean, if you watch when cattle are being worked up at the corrals on the corner of Bertrell and Highway 12, it's really dusty and it's not a lot of animals, really. So right. I lean towards not having this limitation in the guest ranch. And as far as setbacks go, perhaps, so that the facility's infrastructure aren't, next to a neighbor, perhaps we can deal with that in a setback standard specifically for a guest ranch.
I think that's a really good idea because we already wrote a specific setback for RV parks, campgrounds. And so let me eliminate this and throw in a setback standard and we'll assume that takes care of it without having to, decide how much dust particularly is a problem. So I think your idea is better. Let's just scratch what you see there as the proposed item D, and I will bring you a setback standard. We already have a separate special setback for campgrounds. We can certainly do it for guest ranches or for any other use for that matter. So now that we've had the conversation, I think that's a better way to go.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with all that.
Yeah. Okay, good. Anybody else?
No, I feel good about that.
Okay. So then I guess we get back to the comment that we should move this ahead. And obviously we've made one change here. I can come up with a new draft quite promptly. And so if you wanted to, in theory, you could advertise a public hearing on this in front of the Planning Commission for July, or certainly for August. And then, of course, after your public hearing, it could go on to council. But that would be a decision that you could make tonight, just to say, hey, let's go ahead and anticipate a public hearing here in the near future.
I'm okay with going forward on it. I'd like to see what kind of input that we get. I mean, we've been working on this for a few months, so we might as well go for it and put it out there.
Yep, I agree.
Agreed.
Okay, well, I will get you a complete draft with these changes within the next week or so, which gives plenty of time for PEG to get it posted and ready to stand a hearing at your July meeting, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, that sounds good. So it would be Guest Ranch, RV Park, campground, right? And then was campsites in that too?
Yeah, the camp. Well, we decided in the conversation that there's no longer a place for that designated campsite that we had, given that we'd come up with, you know, these regulations on campgrounds. And we can always revisit that, of course, but I understood from, well, not this the past time, but from 2 months ago, that we didn't think we needed that designated campsite anymore. That what I understood from that conversation, if my memory is at all good, is that it was an attempt to say that, hey, maybe tents are preferable in some way or another to trailers or motorhomes, which of course is not something that's easy to say directly. But, you know, in terms of the town's regulation of these things, everything that you need to say about any type of campsite, whether it would be a tent site or whatever, is here. And it seems to me that if you get a CUP application where you feel for some reason about that specific site or, you know, location is inappropriate, then you're going to deal with it through the commercial development standards we already have as far as buffering and compatibility. And you're either going to reject it or modify it to suit. So I don't see a role for the campsites being segregated out from other campgrounds at this point in time, but maybe somebody else sees it a different way.
No, I think I do remember talking about that. I think I there's something that I have about bringing that up. I've done it a couple of times, but yeah, I think that's what we had decided.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Well, you'll see a full draft from me in about a week. And the commission probably ought to take a vote on setting a hearing. That probably ought to be a formal action, that somebody moves that you set a hearing on this and, you know, have a motion second vote here so that the hearing is set for the July meeting.
Okay, so I'll make a motion then that we go forward with having a public hearing for the Guest Ranch and RV Park that we've been working on for next month. And so I made a motion that we have that meeting.
I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Josie Muse, aye.
Ricky Schaus, aye.
Pauline Thompson, aye.
Marion, are you actually on the call or is that really Steve? Because Marion should vote since Haley's not here, if Marion's on. Steve Johnson, could you unmute so I can see if that's you or Marion? Well,
it blinked.
It blinked, but it didn't.
I was asking him to unmute on the little.
Oh, okay.
I thought was why. Oh, there we go.
Hi.
Okay. Yeah, it is Steve, not Marion.
Oh, okay. Okay, because she had said she wasn't going to be on the call. So, okay. Thanks, Steve. Bye. We're good. Never mind.
Okay. So was there anything else that we were going to talk with you about, Lee?
Yes. We began a conversation last time that I would summarize as saying that it's very hard to talk about residential uses until we talk about the context for them. And we talk particularly about the importance of the irrigated lands and what would happen if the irrigated lands were in fact parceled out into 5-acre pieces and began to lose a lot, if not all, of their actual agricultural value. And I know that this is a discussion that's been had before in Boulder and had in different ways at different times. And we also then got into the whole notion of what are the limitations on the number of residences that can be approved in Boulder. And there are several public service issues about that in terms of public safety and emergency services. There is also a question about at what point does the number of on-site wastewater disposal systems become an issue. And there's also then besides water quality, the water quantity. It is my understanding, and we would need to clarify this if we're going down the path that I suggest, you know, how much water can the water company actually provide? And then we talked about the idea that there are wells, and I have taken the step of talking to the Utah Geological Survey, of trying to get whatever information exists, if any, about groundwater in Boulder. And they've shown me how to get just the basic record of where there are wells. But I'm waiting for a more definitive yes or no. We have information from them that, given that it's summer and they're in the field a lot, I may not get that answer very quickly. But it seems to me that if that answer comes back saying, hey, they're either we don't know at all, which is possible, or we don't know much, or there are some limitations, we would need to go back into the general plan before we went into the ordinance and say, hey, we have a water supply issue here, and, you know, have some requirement, wouldn't be that hard to word it, but some requirement that any prospective developer demonstrate that they really do have the water for the long-term sustainability of what it is they propose to do. So I think we're at an information gathering stage with the water question to some degree, and I'll pursue that. Like I said, the geologists are in the field in the summer, and their communication is probably not going to be super rapid, but we do need to have a conversation, probably with perhaps a larger segment of the community than just the Planning Commission, about, hey, what can our public safety services soak up? What can our ability to, you know, provide fire suppression, to provide emergency medical services, to provide law enforcement, you know, what are the limits there? And we have certain roads that also have limits. Those are, you know, we could actually draw a map of those if we had to and say, hey, here's the road problems. It's a little bit easier to talk about those than these others. But I feel like before we talk about 5 acres and whether 5 acres should apply as broadly as it does and how you perceive the application of 5 acre lots to the irrigated lands, before we do that, and hopefully without it delaying things too long, before we do that, we need to have this conversation about, hey, what are the limitations? We know that they exist. We may not agree on exactly what they are, but we know there's actually pretty strict limitations on Boulder's ability to provide services. And I don't know what you guys would be comfortable with in terms of having that conversation maybe with the rest of the community. And I don't know how fast we can get the information we'd like to have on water. I mean, one of the most likely answer on water is that we don't actually know enough to say. But if that's true, if we can say, hey, we checked it out, we made every effort to learn, we don't know enough to say what the limitations are, then I think you have to go to the general plan and say, hey, we need a study, particularly of groundwater here in, you know, the Boulder Valley, the Boulder Basin, whatever you want to call it. And we need to be very cautious about what we approve until we have better information. And, you know, the response to a developer who says, well, I don't want to wait for information is, well, fine, then you cough up the bucks it takes to get that information. And we're not really set up to have that conversation with the developer yet, but I think probably you need to be. So I guess I would like to say that we have a conversation tonight for a few minutes here about what's the best way to get people involved in talking about the limits and when we might do that. And we also, I think, if we're going to have a conversation about those types of limits with people, need to come back to the fundamental, in a conversation with people, come back to the fundamental importance of the irrigated lands and say, are we really okay with a zoning ordinance that contemplates, not that anybody hopes for it, but that allows the whole place to be cut up into 5 acre parcels? Are we comfortable with that? If we are, then okay. Not up to me to judge, but I guess I think that it would be remiss not to go back to that. And then if people say, no, we're not comfortable with that, we can come back and talk about, okay, how do we provide value for the people who own the irrigated lands off into the future, other than letting them have guest ranches and other accessory uses to their agricultural operations, which we certainly can do, are doing. You know, do we need to talk about the transfer of development rights, where development rights are transferred off of the irrigated onto better sites? There are tools we could use, but they're all tools that require a certain amount of political willpower to use. And so I think we need to have the conversation about the meaning of these lands, you know, in the community identity, the community ethos of Boulder. How important are they? Are you willing to take some steps that you haven't taken yet to protect those lands?
Well, could we have a work meeting, an open work meeting? Is that a way to go that direction?
Well, yes, in general, that's absolutely the way to go. I guess that, first of all, if you guys say, hey, no, that's going to be too controversial or conflictual, then I have to, you know, I'm going to listen to that and say, okay, let's move on. If you want to take a run at it, then I think The question is that we can't just have a free-for-all conversation. We need to have a structure to this. You know, and I'm looking at a zoning map of Boulder right now, and we've got nearly 20 square miles of GMU zoning district with 5-acre lots as it stands now. And, you know, you multiply 600, or you divide, multiply 640 by 20 and then divide by 5, you come up with a lot of potential lots. A few of them are already out there and you'd have to deduct those too, but I think we might need to just lay out a map and do some math and say, look, this is what the zoning the way it is right now allows, so that we've got a more specific problem for people to chew on. And then I think we also would need to say, hey, if this isn't okay with you, what are some things we could do that would change this? And, you know, one of the things we could do is to change the density. You could knock the GMU back to one unit per 40 acres, or one unit to 160 acres. One unit to 160 acres would still be more homes than Boulder can provide services to. We can separate the irrigated lands out of the GMU and give them a different designation and deal with them a different way. There's a number of options, and what I would try to do is to lay out no more than 3 or 4 options, scenarios, if you want to call them that, for people to say, look, these are some choices you could make in the zoning ordinance, and subdivision ordinance would be required to amend that as well. These are some options that you have. What do you think? And if people say no, none of that's going to work, that's one answer. If people say we'd like to talk about it more, or we'd like to, you know, try this, then that's another answer. So I think it's absolutely right that we have a work session, but it needs to be a pretty structured one so that people do not just proceed with no information, no possibilities. I think we need to say, look, here's how this really looks when you take it out to its logical conclusion, and then here's some options that you can consider that are within your power to consider to change how it looks.
Yeah. I want to suggest a couple of things around that, Leah. First of all, you know, for everybody, you know, although it might be a difficult conversation, it's absolutely necessary, you know, especially as we're looking at drought right now and water quantity. And if we're able to define what carrying capacity or limitations there are beyond some of the, I think maybe the 3 that you just mentioned, you know, because I would add some more onto that, then we'll have a real basis for, well, what can Boulder deal with? And that gives, I think, precedence to how we define or redefine zoning and GMUs and so on from there. It's going to have to be a community conversation. And in my mind, it's going to have to be a community conversation that's mediated by some neutral party, so everyone is heard in a fair and equitable way, and we don't just break into debate and argument back and forth, but we just get all the information on the table. Those are my initial thoughts.
I like the idea of having a facilitator involved in this, because it's very quickly going to be clear that the potential that the zoning makes you think is out there is deceptive, that the limitations are pretty big in Boulder, and that can get people excited. And so I think if we could find someone who has the ability to serve as a rule keeper and facilitator, that probably would help a lot. I think my role in it would be to say, hey, look, here's some information, here's the options. And there probably ought to be a separate facilitator from me, would make it easier for everyone. And, you know, I can do the math on this. I need to get some better mapping, and Garfield County's mapping resources are not the best, but I can come up with something that approaches a build out capacity thing, and we can work backward with that and say, well, okay, and then take it to what's the logical conclusion of the zoning now. If we don't like the logical conclusion of the zoning now, how do we change it?
Lee, I have a question. This is Cookie.
Sure.
In your speaking with the Utah water people, I think Boulder is still in an area that is an open basin, mm-hmm. as far as like people sinking wells. Are we in a minority in this? And did they say anything about, because of the drought and water tables, that this area might be closed to just open water drilling?
As far as I can tell right now, and I can't tell much, I just haven't spent enough time with them, or they haven't spent enough time with me, however you want to put it. Right now, you know, they have other basins in the state that are really critical and have big problems. And that's where they focused, under the direction of the legislature in part. And I think that, to me, the scenario that I think is going to happen, but I can't say this for sure, is they're going to come back and say, we don't know enough about it to say. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the answer we're going to get. And if that is true, then that's a big limitation on the potential for development. We know that the surface water has a definite limit. We may not know precisely what it is, but we know it has a limit. And we know that that limit is going to be tested under conditions like you're facing right now, as less water comes down off the high country. And so that's going to make people think about drilling wells, right? And we needed that. And then, you know, we also have to always think about the water quality issue. If this is highly permeable stuff that water moves through pretty easily, and I am reasonably sure that some of it is, given that the whole place is made up out of sandstone, then we're going to have to look at the potential for contamination for more homes, as well as the water supply part. And that requires some sophisticated analysis as well. And I'm pretty sure that we don't have the data that would be needed to say there isn't enough information, I don't think, about this groundwater basin here that serves Boulder to say that it should not be an open drilling area. There hasn't been enough pressure on it for anyone to say that. And it may be that as we have further conversations with Utah Geological Survey and talk this through, it may be that the town wants to try to find a way to raise money or get help to have a scientific answer to some of those questions that I suspect we don't have a scientific answer to now.
Okay, that answers my question. I don't know whether you were informed about this, but Jones and DeMille have offered services in the amount of about $10,000 to do a study of just Lower Boulder Road. And they also said there's grant money that we'd end up paying, I think, 6% of that. And I just This is just a question for the rest of the planning the people is like, I don't understand, like, I know that Lower Boulder Road is really owned by a few people, like Wolf Bars for one and Vard Coombs. And I mean, they own across the whole Lower Boulder Road. Is it a waste of money to spend our money on a study like this with those limitations to start with? I mean, we know that there's a lot of traffic. We know that it's only one lane wide in some places. I just am wondering what the rest of the Planning Commission thinks about that. Is that way too off the subject? I don't know. If it is, forget it.
I mean, my quick comments are, how is that data going to be used to expand the roads, to bring more traffic down? Or, you know, we already know there's more traffic than there used to be.
Right.
And like you said, this is part of the carrying capacity for me. If there's a problem with traffic, we don't want to make it easier for more traffic, because that just inundates even more the carrying capacity. And the noise level, by the way, is a limitation I conceive of a lot. And so in my mind, yeah, why do you need to do a study on it? But and how, you know, like how accurate data do we need? It's pretty apparent to anyone who lives down here of the increase. So I sort of agree with you, Cookie.
Yeah, this is Josie. I think that's a lot of money. I agree with both of you. As far as, you know, road ownership, any of us who have property on road frontage, I'm one of them. You know, with the road being a town road and, you know, essentially, I don't know how it looks on paper, but that's an easement or town road comes through. We don't have any say on, you know, the use of that road. Most property lines either come to the center of it or go all the way across, like you said, but I don't think our opinion has any weight really, you know, because of that. But yeah, 10,500 to just do a traffic study on that portion of Boulder seems like a lot of money.
So Josie, is the say somebody did want to widen the road or whatever, and the study with Jones and DeMille you know, was looked at, would it be, how would that be handled? Like if they said, yes, it needs to be widened, would it be, I don't know the right word for it, but condemned or whatever that word is?
No, I can tell you, from experience, I had the same situation in San Juan County. And they needed to widen the road. My property was along the road frontage, and they bought that section of land from me at market price. So I can tell you that's what happened there. And I assume that's typical. I think that landowners could dedicate the land to town if they were so inclined, but, you know, it's a chunk of land. So I don't know how that would help.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in my opinion, if a developer comes in and wants to put in, you know, a subdivision and it would require that the road is widened, I do not think that taxpayers should carry that burden. I think that the developer should carry that financial burden. So that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Okay.
Well, kind of out of our hands, isn't it? I mean, nobody can talk about it, but I don't think there's anything that we can really do about it. So are you still there, Lee?
I'm still here.
Okay, so we're talking about, is August some kind of a work meeting in August too soon to pull some things together?
I don't, that's partly up to you, not to me. I think that July is too soon.
Yeah.
There needs to be a little more opportunity to clarify the water situation if we possibly can, because the water is huge.
Right.
You know, the nature of the beast is that if you've got a specific facility, like the road that we're talking about, Lower Boulder Road, then I think you say, hey, if you want to subdivide here, if you want to develop something here, fine. You bear the cost of figuring it out. And I'm not sure, I think that your subdivision ordinance probably gives you the power to make that happen. We can make sure that it's clear, really clear, and under what circumstances and terms that could happen. I'll have to read that part of the subdivision ordinance carefully and see what I think is missing, if anything. But that's pretty straightforward, because you can shift the cost to one developer, right? The water thing affects everybody in a much bigger way. And the public safety things affect everybody. You know, if you're down to, well, we don't have any volunteer EMTs, and it's 30 miles to Escalante, then that affects everybody in the community, not equally at any one moment, but potentially it affects everyone equally. And I think that we should prioritize those things that affect everybody.
Well, I think so too. And I'm talking about basically having a meeting in August, or I don't know if that's too soon, about the water issue. But you were talking about some options that we might have to move forward.
Right. Right. Well, I think that if we waited until we resolved the water, you know, have full information, or the best information we can on the water thing, we may have to wait quite a while. So my thought is that we should pick apart the zoning and what it means. That's not too hard to do. I've got to make some amendments to the subdivision, or propose some amendments to the subdivision ordinance to comply with state law. Peg has been sending you guys emails regularly about these changes in state law, and they turn out to be pretty big. And I got to do some work on that, just so that Boulder comes into compliance, even if it's stuff that might not affect Boulder a whole lot. And so there's that to do that needs to be done fairly promptly, and then doing this sort of back of the envelope build out analysis that says, hey, this is how big it could be if you fill out the zoning. If you don't like that, here are some options. I could put that together by August, I suppose. September might be the most realistic thing, I think, and that would also give us more time to get more information about the water, if it's possible to get it at all. So I guess I'm thinking that a session that is not a regular planning commission meeting, that is devoted to this, and also it would give you guys time to find that neutral facilitator that I think would bring a lot of value. You're going to have to find somebody who you can either get to volunteer or contract with to play that role. So I'm saying that if you want to press hard, that August is possible, but I'm wondering if September isn't just better from the point of view of getting as many ducks in a row as we possibly can.
Well, yeah, okay, that sounds good. And we can even bring it back up in August and kind of figure out how we're going to go about doing this in September. So that we're still working on. So we can put it on our agenda for August.
Right.
How does that sound with everybody?
Yeah, this is Josie. I have one thought. Well, a couple on this, but so, you know, this is really has the most impact on large landowners, and it's critical that they're at the table, and even possibly a weighted vote because of the amount of land they have to those, you know, who maybe have small parcels that have strong opinions. And so that said, it is going to be farming season. So the further out that we are into, you know, those later fall and winter months is going to be better for those folks to be able to be at the table.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, we'll just bring it back up in August and maybe we'll know by then whether we want to push it into October or what works for everybody and how much information we're starting to gather. So, but I do want to keep it on the agenda, maybe to bring it back up in August, just keep it in our mind.
Lee, this is Cookie again. I'm wondering if you have talked or would want to speak with Randy Catmull, who is our Boulder Municipal kind of, he heads up all the water here in Boulder.
Yeah, I think that that would be a good connection to make. If somebody
can send
me the contact information.
Yeah, I will.
That would be helpful. The other thing that is much easier probably for you guys to do than for me is to get with your public safety people and say, look, where are we really at? And also to say, who could we find that would be an affordable neutral facilitator for whatever meeting we do have out into the future. You're going to need to figure out who you think that person is and, you know, get their time.
Yeah.
You know, I can certainly get my part of it, done by September. You know, I could do it by August if I had to, but I don't think August is the right month to have this meeting. People go on vacation, the farmers and ranchers are busy. It's usually a horrible month to have meetings. So I'm going to say that, and we can talk about it again in July when we come back and have the hearing on the campground, and guest ranch, standards. So, I think we need to move forward here, but you guys, I need to probably sign off from the meeting here, but if you guys have a minute, in the rest of your meeting, to talk about, you know, these other things, it's going to take some consistent, you know, persistent effort here to get to where we want to be.
Well, and I think that we could, one of us could talk to Randy and get some documentation from him in the next few months, because it might be easier for us instead of you doing that. And then also, like you said, finding a facilitator.
Right. And all those things are better done by someone who is there in person.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do that.
All righty. Well, I'm going to take my leave then. I will get you out a full version of the campground guest ranch stuff in its context and the rest of the changes, within a week or so. And, then we'll, talk about it in July.
All right. That sounds good. Thanks, Lee.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks. Have a good evening, everybody.
You too.
Okay, the next thing that we have on the agenda is initial public comment.
Sorry, Colleen, can I interrupt for a sec? Can we just sort of tie a bow on this? Is there someone who will talk to Randy? I'll take care of researching a facilitator and report back in July.
I would like to talk to him.
Okay. And so I've
got it.
Let's report back in July on that preliminary data from both negotiator and municipal water.
And Cookie, what were you going to say?
I just want to give you a heads up that I already called him.
Okay,
But I don't have what I need to, or what you need to do probably is get some data, like some whatever numbers or something from him, because it was just a general conversation of his opinion on, you know, the whole works.
And I'm on having documentation, so we need to start working on what our water looks like, and I think Randy can tell us that, what it looked like in the past, what it's looking like right now, what the projections are for the future.
Yeah.
So, okay, that sounds good. And maybe I'll get with you too, Cookie, you know.
I'm sorry, what?
Maybe I'll get with you and kind of talk to you a little bit more about it, and then we'll...
Okay.
Okay, that sounds
okay, great.
Did anybody have any other comments before I go to public comments? Okay, so let's go ahead and open it up if anyone has any public comments.
On your last discussion, I just wanted to throw in that the county contracted with Utah Geological Survey to do a rather massive groundwater study and water quality study in the basin, whatever the name of the basin is, that's under near Bryce Canyon area. And they did get, the county, I think, I'm not sure if the county had to fork out any money at all. They got a grant to do a lot of this work. And we're talking like to do that study took, I think they were completed in 18 months to 2 years, and it was pretty much over $100,000. I mean, it was a large area, but that's the kind of study that, you know, to do a groundwater study of the whole Boulder area would, you're looking at that, and that would be U.S. or the Utah Geological Survey doing it. So I'm just citing these numbers off the top of my head from memory, but if you want me to, I can contact county planning and just find out. Well, Judy could also do that too, but they would know the exact numbers of what happened with that study and how much ground it covered, how much money it was, and how long it took. And we would definitely need a grant to cover something that large if that's what you're looking at. I think Randy with Boulder Farmstead will have the best indication of anyone in town, but we may be needing to look at a larger part of the area regarding well usage. So.
Okay.
Mm.
Thanks, Ben.
Yep.
We don't have any hands up for comments, do we? No comments?
I haven't been looking. No. I'm not seeing anybody else with hands raised. No.
This is just initial public comments?
Yeah. We're not in the public hearing yet.
I'm going into the county on next Wednesday. I'll check with them on that, on
great.
That water. Okay.
Great. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so it's 8:00 and we'll go ahead and move into the public hearing. So I'll make a motion to close. Oh, do we need to do that? Do we need to close?
No.
So we're just gonna open the public hearing right now. And what we've been doing is having anyone in the public, if you have any questions about the Deer Ranch subdivision, we'll answer any questions that we can. David Bird is on. So anyone in the public who has any questions about the application for the preliminary application for subdivision with Deer Ranch can talk or ask questions.
And then you'll open the public hearing officially after that?
Right.
Okay, got it. I see no hands waving or No questions right now. Okay, I think you can go into public hearing.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to go into our public hearing. Do I have a second?
I'll second that. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Josie Mews, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Now, the public hearing is open, and if anyone has any comments to make in the public, it's your turn, it's your time.
Silence.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to make a motion to close the public hearing.
Colleen, at this point, just because of the status of the application, Dave can talk more about this in a sec. Rather than close it, could you make a motion to continue the public hearing at the next meeting?
That would be our preference. We have some things to get ready, and a continuance would be welcomed.
Okay, so what I was going to do is I was going to close the public hearing, and then don't we discuss it and talk and then decide after the public hearing is closed?
If you just say you're continuing it at this point, that I think is how it's done.
Okay. Well, and that's what I was going to do. I just want to go ahead and continue this on for the next month.
Yes. So if you could make that motion.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to continue this on for the month of July. Do I hear a second?
I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Josie Mews, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Now you can talk about it.
Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and, so does anyone have any comments? Does anyone else have any comments on this?
I'd like to hear what Dave Bird has to say.
Well, so after last month's hearing, which we talked about the road, that was one of the main things, and got clarification about what Pete wanted and what the Planning Commission seemed to be indicating. And I talked to Sugarloaf Valley Farms about that. And, you know, they're worried about what that's going to entail and are looking into it. So I'd say for the immediate future, we've held off because feasibility may be a problem. And talking to Curtis, he's had some ideas, both about that and about water issues. And I've been waiting to talk to my client, but I've been unable to this week, so
and that's
really all I can report.
The water is very important too, as far as the town, to make sure that there is water that goes with each lot.
Yeah, so I can explain a little bit about that. There's an existing well adjoining this lot and a water right for where an RV is now parked, and a septic system there too. And from my plan is that the water will come from that well. I have directed my client and have filed an application for taking water from that well for one domestic use. Curtis seemed to indicate he thought that might be rejected, which was news to me, and suggested some alternatives. So I, you know, that's the status of the water.
Was that well?
I understand that when that lot gets finalized, it has to have a water right available, and we're working toward that.
Okay, good.
And I just needed to ask a question. I've heard recently, and I don't know that it's in our ordinances, but is that well for culinary water, is that going to be metered?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. I just wanted to check.
I don't think it's metered currently. And we envisioned a well sharing agreement to share the cost of running the well. But beyond that, we haven't, no plan for a meter that I'm aware of.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so I think that's all that we need for on this conversation. And we'll just go ahead and hold it for carry it on for the next month. Is everybody okay with that?
Yep.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Dave. I'll sign off.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye bye.
Okay, so the next thing that we have is the conditional use revisions on Chapter 8. And Michelle, can you talk about that?
I have it up.
Does everyone have a copy of remember what the revisions were? And what we're doing is just sending it on to the town council, right?
Colleen, there. I know that when he first sent this out, this was from March 11th. And
yeah.
Frankly, I have not read through it super carefully, but there were other items. Well, just the whole concept of how public or how conditional uses are being handled has changed. So I'm not sure if he captures all of that in this ordinance. Plus, Curtis had also mentioned we need to add the requirement for notification in this, same as we have for subdivision, so that it's anyone who's dealing with a conditional use permit the adjacent landowners or nearby landowners will be notified of what they're doing, since we're handling so much through COPs now.
Revised version of Chapter 8.
So there's
use permits. So this is what I was looking at is not really what we should be looking at. Is that what you're saying? There's still more that needs to be added to this.
I'm sure this is fine for what it contains, but I'm not sure it's complete. So
can we just talk about this next month either? I mean, then as far as if it's not complete, we need to have it completed, right? Before we can do anything else, move on?
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to review this. I don't know when you sent it out, Peg, but I'd like to bump it to next month so I can really look at it.
Okay, that sounds fine. So let's just go ahead and move it on to the agenda for July.
Okay, I need to understand if, because I know I've sent this out at least two or three times, and if you guys aren't receiving it, I need to know that. It didn't come looking like this document. I've cut this piece off from the back of another memo. It's called RV. It was the initial RV. RV standards and CUP Rev 1 or something like that. And it was from March 11th initially. It's been resent out a few times, once in April and again in May, and I think again recently. But the very beginning of the document is talking about RV stuff from back then. And this was at the tail end of that. So you may have it and you aren't recognizing it because you have to scroll to the bottom of the document for these last few pages. But I'm
sure. Peg,
It's on page 6, 7, 8 of that document.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I got it and I found it, but my question is, I'm only seeing, you know, under the track changes where they cross out where things have changed. I'm just not seeing anything substantive that was changed. And
right.
And I guess that's my question. Is this, and I would have to compare it with existing, you know, just do a quick run, which I haven't done, but I'm wondering if it's only a couple of words that have crossed out that have changed, it's, or is there more?
Just scanning through it quickly myself right now, this is pretty much what exists now.
Yeah, that's
almost
what I was thinking.
No changes. So
yeah, I only see one word.
I think it was just pulled out, scanned out, and it needs to be examined. And
okay.
Elizabeth, oh. You mean, which means,
so let's just go ahead and put it back on for next month.
Yeah. At least it'll give everyone a chance to. Oops. Give everyone a chance to look at what it is. And like I say, there's rather extensive change in your whole usage of conditional use permits with all the stuff we've been looking on.
Well, and so, I have that document from March 11th, but I didn't keep the end of it because, yeah, that was March 11th. That seems a long time. So we'll just go ahead and put it on the agenda for July.
Okay.
To and then, like you said, it seems like there's more that needs to be added on to it, right?
Yeah. Let me, how about if I get with Lee offline here and just try to understand the scope of what we're talking about, because I think the revision is going to be a massive revision.
Okay.
It's like a rewrite, basically.
Okay. All right. So we'll just put it on the agenda for next month.
Yeah, I'll talk to you.
Okay. So then we have the RSTR renewal for Fall and Fuller. And Peg, do you have the documentation for that? Did everybody see that as far as what they submitted?
Yes.
I sent it around to everybody. I don't have it set up to jump into for screen share. Does everyone have that or have you looked at it?
I did.
Yes, I looked at it. I did too.
And I did 4.
I mean, basically she fulfilled the requirements of the paperwork that's required, and the message in her cover letter was simply that they want to continue doing it, but they didn't activate their permit with a paying guest this year. But they want to renew it for next year. And she submitted, I mean, clearly they have the relationship set up with Utah Tax Commission, because that's those are two of the documents that she sent. So it just shows 000 for tax. There was no income. So she's fulfilled the paperwork requirement of what we're asking for to do a renewal.
Okay. So you also sent out an email, Peg, and it said, procedurally speaking, are you okay handling renewals in this manner, et cetera, et cetera. So the thing that I wanted to say too is you said, do you want Michelle Jr. or me to provide the recommendations, and there's a couple of questions, and I'm okay with any of the stuff that you do, because I know that we talked about how there needs to be some procedural or something, some form maybe that needs to go with this, and I'm fine with you and Judy and Michelle with you putting together a form. Is that what you were saying, Ted?
More or less. I mean, you can approve or not approve Alex's renewal independent of this. You can do that tonight. But my larger question was just dealing with how do you want to handle it? Like the person submits those kind of documents to me, and, you know, it could just be a straight administrative approval like we do business licenses. unless you want oversight and you want to actually do the approvals yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the original intent behind it was also to, if there were problems in the neighborhood with a RSTR, with excessive noise or a breach of ordinance, that people could actually weigh in. So I understand there's an administrative part of it, but in some circumstances, there might be more than that that needs to be reviewed by the Planning Commission itself.
Right. I was thinking if it was something that was potentially cut and dried like this one seems to be, that's purely administrative, but you may run into those situations where there have been complaints filed or there are some development things going on that might affect whatever. So why don't we just keep doing it like this, where you guys are the approval agency and you handle these, and we'll just pass along the submittals when we receive renewal submittals. One thing that Michela had brought up that I think might be a good idea is we don't have any volume right now in terms of renewal, but same as we do with business licenses that get renewed once a year at the beginning of the year, if we could possibly move everything into that, it would make things easier as well for notification as well as actual permitting. Is that okay if we move in that direction?
I have a comment on that. If we have to, you know, review a new application, and if we had to do that all at one time of the year, that could be a pretty heavy burden as well. If, you know, everything came at once, that would mean that, you know, December would be dedicated to reviewing and public hearings on these CUPs. Does that make sense?
My thought is you'd have new applications at any time, but they just sort of get renewed at the beginning of the year.
So they would expire regardless of what time of year they applied, they would expire on the 31st of December? Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
I have a thought on that. I mean, for like an initial license, it could be, do we have a fee associated with it? I've forgotten what it is.
I don't think so.
Then that makes it even easier, because then we wouldn't even have to give like a shortened fee or, you know, prorated. They can just get that initial one once it's approved by the commission, and then it will come up due with, you know, the list at whatever time we decide that that's going to be. And it wouldn't necessarily have to be the first of the year. I mean, my suggestion would be that we stagger it, so we do business licenses in January, and then maybe we do these in June or July, so that we have, I don't know, just a thought.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
And then my other thought is that in your email, you have mentioned that some of the items that you'd collect is, you know, the paperwork that's required to make sure the application is complete, but it's also key that if there were any issues brought forward, any complaints or any other additional information that's pertinent to the CUP permit, that be presented at the same time. And I like the idea of maybe Colleen mentioned of having a form where we can just put down that form, and if it doesn't apply, it doesn't apply. If it does, then we review it.
Okay. Yes. Michelle and I will make up a form that encompasses these things.
Okay.
And we'll present that in July, if you like.
And it'll be interesting to see, since it's opened up, things have opened up a little bit, if either one of these RSTRs get any business this year. So it'll be different than last year, since everything was really shut down.
Yeah, we're in the roaring 20s again.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Okay, did we go ahead and make a motion then for a renewal? Do we have to do that?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and make a motion to renew the RSTR permit that the Fogels and Fullers have. Do you have a second?
I'll second that. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Josie Venus, aye. Cookie Shouse, aye.
Oh, slow to the gun there, you guys.
So I was waiting for Josie. I've been following in line after her. That's my excuse.
I had to mix it up a little bit. Sorry.
You scared the heck out of me. I have a question. I've sent a couple of emails requesting gosh, it's so hard for me to remember now. It's been a couple of months. But I sent them to Michaela and to Judy. And I was wondering, I have everything about how we figure the amount of beds we have to have in order to receive our share of the resort tax. Steve had said that it was very close. We almost lost the resort tax because we didn't have enough beds. And I've got the formula. Peg was able to pass along part of it because of another thing she was working on, which is 15%. But Judy has signed the last, whatever form that is. There was no number on it or whatever. But I would still like an answer to that. What is the total number of beds we need per residences?
And Cookie, I apologize. I did, that form is going to come due again in the next month or so.
Uh-huh.
I believe, and I have put in a call and then it fell off my radar to the state, the representative from the state, because I don't know how we reached that. So I have a call and I will follow up on that and get back to you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Michaela. I know you've got a lot on your agenda but I just didn't want it to get too far out for me or I'll forget what in the world I was asking for. So anyway, now I know. Okay. Thank you.
Sounds good. So upcoming business. So Peg, will you run through that again? What we kind of decided?
Yeah, well, so we will have a public hearing on, presumably we will have a public hearing continuance on the Deer Ranch thing. We'll have a public hearing on Guest Ranch and RV Park campground development standards. We will we will talk about what you're going to talk about in August. Oh, I know, we need to have talk to Randy Catmull and report back, find a facilitator and report back, see what we're dealing with in July. So that may be a ongoing effort, but at least we'll have a place to start with there. And
that's it.
We'll have a CUP revision discussion after you've had a chance to look at what the existing ordinance is and get a feel for things. And I will have talked to Lee and tried to scope out the scope of the revisions that will be required, actually. And you will have information on, you'll have a form on Rester renewals that we're creating that you can approve or whatever.
Thank you, Peg.
That's what I think I have down.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay, so that way, our meeting will be July 8th next month. So, and then we have final public comments. Does anyone have any final public comments?
Oh, I forgot one thing. And Judy Drain was going to.
We have.
Judy Drain was going to try to find out from the county some information on groundwater studies from Utah Geological Survey.
That's right.
And I just want to put in, Dan and I have a public comment that we'd like to make. I'm sorry, I'm trying to figure out how to raise my hand and do all this stuff on the fly. Sorry. But let me give you a video. So tell me when we can do this.
I think you can do it now, right?
I'm trying to make it. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to make it a video so you can see our charming faces. Oh, I don't see it.
Okay.
Anyway, oh dear.
There should be a little start video thing down in the lower, right hand or left hand corner of your screen that should say start video.
Oh. Yeah, you know what? Apparently it wasn't set up for that. Let me see if I can. Oh dear. Shoot.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. You'll have to just imagine us in our great looking selves because I don't have my computer and we're using his. Okay. Anyway.
Hi, can you all hear me?
Yes.
First, we want to thank the PC for bringing up the topic last month of available housing. We want to lend our voice in support of that direction. We think that this issue touches on what will keep Boulder as a thriving, vibrant community. And one vital component of that is of such a community is how to keep the young people and the young families who are here, how do we keep them in Boulder? And so this issue of affordable housing obviously is not unique to Boulder, but right now there's no available housing either to buy or to rent in town. And when land does come up for sale, it's priced out of the reach of most locals. The result is that we have more second homeowners who don't live here, are not integral parts of the community, more absentee landowners who have very little loyalty to Boulder as a community. Another result is that we have fewer young people and young families, some native Boulderites and long-term residents who are renters. They are vulnerable, and if they lose their rental for a variety of reasons, they have few options, housing options, other than leaving town. This is not even considering how some long-term renters see their path to ownership slipping further away. So we recognize this is a complex topic, stirs very strong emotions. It's also an issue that even if we had consensus on what we wanted as a community for housing, which we clearly do not, it will take several years to get something done. So what to do in the meantime? We offer two suggestions. One, we as a town should in some ways convey to young people and young families that they are wanted here and that the town is working to keep them here. The second thing I think we should do, and it's something that Matt and Lee talked about earlier, is some sort of I hate this term, a housing task force, because it just conjures up really weird things. But this is such a big issue. This is such a complex and emotional issue that we need some sort of an impartial, in the term that Matt and Lee used, a moderator or a facilitator, someone with expertise in this area. This is absolutely critical. And as Matt pointed out, if everyone is to have their voices heard, and Lee said if we could come up with structured discussions, then we might be able to make some progress as far as where we could go with this. We don't see this task force as kicking this issue down the road. Rather, it's the PC is already stretched. You guys don't need more things to do, but this is such a powerful and important issue that it should not be put on your plate as well. So that's pretty much where we stand, at least that's where I stand. And I think Jennifer has a couple of other comments.
Thank you.
Yeah. I just feel like we need to whatever this task force, if that's something that's a possibility, I'd love to see something that what you guys were just talking about in terms of what you guys are going to get a facilitator for and the land use and all that. Obviously, these two issues are totally integrated and combined. You know, they affect each other. But I'd love to see some thinking outside the box on how we might go about doing doing some of this. I'm going to go ahead and send some what I consider to be non-conventional ways of maybe looking at how we might be able to secure land and or ideas for doing this. I'll send that in an email to you. But anyway, just thanks a lot for all your hard work. We know this is a big thing and you got a lot going on, but appreciate you listening to the community and us. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
That's it.
I'd just like to say I totally agree with Dan and Jennifer, and I have been snapping pictures of different housing, affordable housing projects. I called up one little town in Colorado, and I haven't heard back from the developer. I don't know whether he's still in business or not. But anyway, I think it's going to take, like you say, an effort from the community to make this happen. And having just been on vacation and gone through a bunch of communities with rich, old, gray-haired people that are, it's so depressing. And even though the cheese shops and the wine shops are nice, it is, I would never want to live in a community like that. So what we have to do is put our shoulder to the wheel somehow and get this started. And I'm available somehow. If you can think of an assignment for me, Dan and Jennifer, I will be on your team. Over.
Peg, were you going to say something? Peg?
No.
Doesn't look like we have any other comments.
I'm not seeing that. I was looking at the chat, and Elizabeth, can you, I haven't been done very well in answering your chat. Is there, did you want to say anything out loud? Elizabeth.
I'm all set. Thank you.
Oh, you had a couple chat questions that I did not respond to. Did you want to say those out loud?
Sure. I was just asking when you all were talking about the CUP revisions, I just asked if you remembered which meeting the document was attached to on the Boulder website so I could see it. And if you didn't know which one, if it can be reposted with next month's agenda with the accompanying documents.
Okay.
And I can email that as a follow-up with you.
Okay.
But I know you had mentioned that it was put, you know, that you shared it with the PC in March and then some, I can't remember the other date you said, but I was just looking while you were talking and I was trying to find it as you were talking.
Okay. I'm going to put it on today's meeting under meeting material.
Okay. Thank you.
But it's not there yet, I guess.
Yeah, it wasn't there when I was looking earlier. Okay. And so that was why I just asked that. But thank you very much, Peg.
Okay. I do not see any other hands raised for comments. Anyone want to shout out anything?
Close the meeting.
Do I
have a second?
I'll second that. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Josie Muse, aye.
Cookie Shouts, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Thank you all. Oh,
seamless. Perfect.
We can do something right anyway.
Yeah, when we're all ready to get out of here.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Elizabeth.